£10,000 a month for a high-profile operator like Max Clifford. A good agent should know which journalists will be interested in which stories and be able to place them in the right publications with a handful of carefully considered phone calls. Advertising. I've left this until last, because it's the most expensive, and it's pretty rare for a new company to have the money needed for a sustained radio, TV, or print campaign. If you're operating a local service, then you will obviously want to advertise locally. If your customers all work in the hotel industry, then you will want to advertise in a trade publication. If you want to reach kids, then you should be advertising online, not in a Sunday supplement. Once you've worked out where you should be advertising, you need to think about what you'll be advertising. Advertising, like businesses themselves, works best when it solves people's problems, and you'll do well if you can present your company as the solution. Whether you do this with humor or just by stating the facts will depend on your business and your market. Call up the radio station or publication or website you want to advertise on and ask how much they charge. The real figure they expect you to pay is probably somewhere between two-thirds and half of what they first tell you, and the more ads you place, the cheaper each ad will become. Conventional wisdom says that a customer needs to see or hear an ad at least 7 times before they will remember you, so you're going to have to budget for a lot of ads. Do your sums very carefully before you commit to an advertising campaign, and if you think you can afford it, it's probably worth talking to a specialist advertising agency. At Bannatyne Health Clubs, we use advertising very sparingly. When we open a new club, we pay for a prominent ad or two in the local paper in our opening week, and after that only if we have special offers and are on a recruitment drive. Even though we're a national chain, I don't see any point in a national advertising campaign, as people in Surrey aren't going to join my club in Durham. The secret to effective advertising is to target your marketing spend as tightly as possible. Building a team. Few businesses get to grow a decent size unless they employ a good team of people, and your ability to assemble a team could make the difference between fortune and failure. Taking on staff is a big step, and a lot of entrepreneurs suffer from a kind of culture shock when the company that has previously just been them and their friends suddenly welcomes a stranger through the door. Staff requirements will change as your company grows. At first, new businesses thrive when a small team gets caught up in the challenge, and people don't realize they're working 15-hour days because it's so much fun. In the early days, you need people who will muck in and do everything from answer the phone to help raise finance. As your business grows, you will need people who specialize in particular areas, and as those areas expand, you will need to find people with management skills to make sure everyone's efforts are coordinated. New members of staff have a very different perspective from the founders. They're unlikely to have a financial stake in the company's success beyond their salary, and they're less likely to work long hours unless they get something other than money out of it. The first employees in a new company are motivated by different things. Perhaps the opportunity to get experience in an area their previous employer wouldn't have given them a chance at, or the opportunity for early promotion. Understanding what motivates your employees is the secret to getting the most out of them. Hiring staff can be time-consuming and expensive. I found it can often be cheaper and quicker to train existing staff for new roles than to bring in someone from outside. If you have a talented team, you should always look to promote from within. Talent is the most difficult resource to manage, and the most successful people in business are those who have found ways of letting their staff shine in roles they were born to. Perhaps, instead of looking for a new recruit who can handle your sales, you should let an able team member move into sales and recruit someone cheaper to take on some of their admin tasks. Staff are any business's most expensive resource, and your job is to manage that resource as cost-effectively as possible. Determining salaries. Deciding how much to pay employees is a delicate business. As a general rule, you should keep your salaries as low as possible. Nothing eats into your cash flow and your capital like salaries, and if you can shave a few grand off your salary bill each month, it might just keep you afloat for a couple of extra months, and that could be all the time you need to land the contract that transforms your business. As an employer, You have a whole range of other incentives you can use to motivate your team instead of money. Survey after survey shows that people don't move jobs to get a better salary. They do it because they don't feel valued. Offering people a position where they will make a difference, where they will have fun, and where their hard work won't go unappreciated, has been proved to be as good an incentive as a pay rise. However, if you don't pay the going rate, you will have a high staff turnover and will be constantly diverted from running your business with recruitment headaches. I believe people should be rewarded for doing their job well, and I use bonuses as an incentive to get the best out of the people I employ. When I ran my care homes, every member of the team got an annual bonus when the homes achieved a 98% occupancy rate. Everyone shared the bonus, from the nurses to the cleaning staff, so that everyone felt they were part of a team. I have a similar scheme at my health clubs now. When I use lawyers, I will often strike a deal with them that means they will only get part of their fixed fee if the negotiations are concluded to my advantage and on time. When I employ builders, I incentivize them to save money by sharing any savings with them if they can use faster construction methods or source a cheaper supplier. Not only does this save me money on the initial building project, but I can use that knowledge to save money on all future building projects. Whenever possible, you want to pay for results and not effort. So whoever you're dealing with, try to find a way to incentivize them to do their work at the standard you expect. I never understand businesses that outsource their maintenance or their cleaning or their bookkeeping. If one of my clubs isn't clean, I want the manager to be able to A, know who is responsible, and B, have the authority to get it cleaned. If we use an outside cleaning agency, the cleaner won't report to the manager, but to their own boss, outside our company. And as you don't pay the cleaner's wages, you also pay the agency that employs them a fee on top. I think outsourcing is often a waste of money. You can't control the agency's recruitment policy, and you could end up with a different person on your premises every day. The consequence